Welcome to Grand Heron International's Let's Rumble, Let's Ramble, our monthly live broadcast where two of our professional coaches select a relevant and thought-provoking topic to rumble over. And of course, we broadcast that live on LinkedIn, YouTube, and Facebook. But if you're listening to this episode, it's because it's been converted into an audio podcast for your listening pleasure. We hope that you will enjoy today's topic.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello to everybody. You are actually listening to Let's Ramble, live recorded on August 25th, 2022. This is our second episode where we will discuss what the future of work might look like. I am a professional certified coach with the International Coaching Federation and an associate coach with Grand Heron International. My colleague joining me today is Enza Signorella, who is also an associate coach with me at Grand Heron International. Together, we would look at the aspects and questions we should be asking ourselves about the future of work beyond the current debate of where work is located. However, before we go into the future of work, Enza did a little bit of research and looked at what the history of work looked like. Enza, you want to share with us?
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot, Gabby. It's great to be here with you today. I wish to some extent we had a perfect crystal ball, and I'm holding here a paperweight, so we would be able to accurately predict the future of work. But because we don't, we have lots of data that is emerging. And so today's objective is really to have a look at some of that data, the trends, and we're probably not going to have any answers, but as coaches, we're really good at asking questions. And so our hope is that you leave this call with perhaps a question that you weren't considering before, and some newfound awareness about the whole topic of the future of work. So yes, I came across a video a while back. I was taking this course, and it looked at the history of human resources way back more than 5,000 years, but I'll just take you back to the middle of the 18th century. And at that time, we probably have great-grandparents that were living at that time, and the focus or the unit of work was the farm. So we were living in agrarian societies. The unit of work was the farm. People worked the land, and their family was there as well. So that was the unit. And then as industrialization started to occur, factories were being built. The farmers realized that they'd probably make more money in the industries. And so that's the first migration that happened. And at this point, people left the farm to go work in the factories. So you were no longer a master of your own little work system. You were in somebody else's work system. And with that came what's called the authoritarian drive system. So normally or usually you'd have a supervisor, somebody who was driving the workers for maximum productivity. And at this point in time, we see the rise of what was called scientific management or systemized management theory. And this is the only part I'm going to get that deep into history. But it was named after Friedrich Taylor. And this was what we know today as specialization of labor. So every single task was broken down into its very technical aspect. And then, of course, you had some sort of a manager overseeing that production. But soon enough, what happened is the supervisor realized that, yes, the workers were being productive, but there was a law of diminishing returns because the workers, we weren't addressing their emotional well-being and the psychology of being a worker. So all that to say is that we can't talk about the future of work, the technical notion of producing something, without talking about the theory of management. So not just the what we're doing at work, but how are we going to be doing it? So I think that would be probably one of the first questions is how are we willing to adapt our management to better respond to the trends in the future of work? So that would be the first comment.
And thank you so much. Not only that is really insightful to look into the history, because in order to know where we're going, where we're heading, we have to know where we're coming from. I actually like the crystal ball. And for everybody out there that's listening to us, joke aside, we put a lot of thought into this, and in no way, as Enza said, we have the answers. We're really good as coaches as asking the questions It's just that we did notice so many trends that we wanted to kind of make light a little bit of what are we seeing there. We've heard so much about during the pandemic about a remote work and what exactly does that mean? Is that really, that's why we actually, when we talked, we said, are we really looking beyond the location? Where do we want to work? And Enza said something very good about adapt. This is the word I think that we've heard a lot in the last 2 years. And I think it's here to stay forever. It's not that we haven't had to adapt in the past. However, right now, as Enza said, we're concentrating a lot in our profession, let's say, as coaches. How do we prepare people? How do we prepare leaders to really lead this adaptation, if you want? We heard a lot in the last 2 years, again, employees being asked, where do you want to work? How do you want to split? We hear the word hybrid. It's such a big word right now. What does that mean, hybrid? But we've heard not as much about how do we prepare our leaders to really be there and support and actually adapt themselves to this new way of working. And before we go into more details on what have we seen in leadership in the last 2 years? Because even though there's no names attached to it, we've seen some changes in the leadership. So, Enza, anything you want to add before we go forward?
Yeah, I would ask that. I think the main question so we're talking right now specifically about possibly the fact of where we work. So definitely hybrid work. According to several sources out there, I'm going to cite one of them, Gartner, hybrid work becomes mainstream. So I think if we're debating, you know, hybrid or no hybrid, I think the ship has sailed, right? So, and I'm only referring, of course, to knowledge type work, types of work where we don't have to be in a physical location to actually produce something. So if we're sitting on our computer all day, does that necessarily mean we have to be in a specific location? So again, there's different types of jobs. Some of them cannot be done hybrid. That's a given. But for the most part, for those that can, the notion of hybrid is the ship has sailed. And I think it becomes a question then of examining how then do we want to respond to that.
And actually, I like very much what you said. We want to choose how we want to respond. Maybe I'll challenge you, because that's what we do. We challenge. I'll challenge you to maybe say, not how do we respond, but how are we going to be proactive about it? And how are we going to really plan in order to really see what is out there? I've seen a lot in leaders in the last 2 years, changes and somebody said it's like we're rehumanizing leadership. Is that too strong of a word? Maybe not. A lot of empathy is coming to light. And I think that is really helping to shape the trust. I would say that trust is really how this future of work is going to really be defined by. And what I'm trying to say with that is, before, to your point, we were really used of all being in one place. We were just sitting in an office. We were very visible. We kind, as leaders, we kind of had a bit of a control of what the narrative that was going on. Right now, we just need to trust, I think, our colleagues and employees really to do what they're there to do.
Yeah, so Gabby, when I hear you talk, there's two things that come out for me. And they are context agnostic, I think. So one is this notion of not being reactive, but being strategic, like preparing for something. And if the pandemic has taught us anything, is that random things will happen. And hopefully there's history that we can learn from. So I guess the first point would be, how can we be strategic about the future of work and think about it proactively moving forward and just not assume that the way we work today is fine and will take us for the next 30 years. So I think there's value in reexamining how we work on a more frequent basis. So that would be my first takeaway. And then the second is this notion of trust. So knowing that we will probably have to reexamine the future of work periodically, this has to be underpinned by this notion of trust, because the way that we'll do something today will probably not be the same that we'll do it tomorrow. And for us to be able to move forward, we have to be able to trust who is in our ecosystem working with us.
Absolutely. And maybe I'll just piggyback on that, if I could say that, to just when we talk about trust, if we look around us, I think people in the workforce right now, they're a lot more tech savvy, they're a lot more educated, they're a lot more demanding in terms of being satisfied in their jobs and really in their personal lives. And they demand to find ways in which they will be trusted to do what's the best. It's definitely, I think the two of us could go on and on about this. We're not going to solve it today. It's just, I think there's few things, or maybe I would say few skills that maybe the leadership of the future will need to master in order to really have a hybrid team, or maybe a remote, or how some people call it, work from anywhere team. And I would say that's digital literacy, delegation, and coaching. And of course, we love coaching. We're here because of coaching. So we need to talk about coaching. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I remember when I first studied to become a coach, my intention, I did that because I actually wanted to be a better manager. So it's interesting because I learned the coaching capabilities as a toolkit for management and then eventually leadership. And I've seen the last year, possibly year and a half, is there has been an uptick in terms of people asking, you know, like it, like the legitimacy of coaching as a leadership capability. So definitely I would agree with you. And I think that if we could leave our audience even with just that reflection to think, okay, what is my leadership style today? Who am I as a leader? Is it serving the current context that I'm working in? And if it is, that's great. But we also have to think about, will it serve the context of the future? And I think to be able to do that, we have to think about what will happen in the future. And you mentioned a really important one, which is digital transformation, right? So absolutely, I think as a leader, I'd be thinking, how will the world continue to change? And we know technology changes so quickly. How can I lead across a screen, right? Do I have to be in person to lead? I don't think so. I think what's really important is, as a leader, one of the biggest things that we're accountable for is setting a vision. And that becomes so much more important moving forward, because if our workforce is everywhere, and if results is what we're going to be looking at, well, then this notion of being very clear as a collective, what is our vision and how do we communicate that out? So I would definitely agree with the comments that you said there, Gabby.
Thank you so much. And as you were talking, I was actually thinking about how do we also recruit, but maybe we'll stop for a second to see if we have any questions.
Yes, I would see one. Let's just read it.
How should employers and or employees spark conversations about the future of work? What if the levels of trust are not quite there yet within a workplace environment? That's a great question. You want to take it, Enza?
Yeah, maybe I'll start, because there are two parts to the question. So I'll probably start with the first one, which is how should employers and or employees start conversations about the future of work? So I think that if we are examining basically market data, so no matter what's happening in the economy or in our political system, those are all tied to what the future of work would look like. So I don't think it'd be foreign to be at a table where you might be examining your latest results or what does the latest market research show, is think about the macro dynamics and how that would affect the future of work, right? So we talk about the green economy, and yes, we're going to be taking steps towards that. So we have to start thinking within our workplace, what are the skills that people will need? So if we're abandoning a line of production for whatever reason, because it's not necessarily green, but we're going to invest in another line of production because it is green, then that's a perfect pretext to have a conversation about, okay, well, the future of work. So what are the skills that we're going to need? Where will people do this work? How will it be rewarded? How will the job description change? So I think what I want to leave you with is that it's the conversation is systemic. So if you can get comfortable connecting different dots that you think are not related to the future of work, that's already a big win towards anticipating what the future will be and how you will be adapting to it. So that's the first part. And then Gabby, maybe if you want to take a stab at the second part, which was about the trust.
The trust. Sure. Thank you so much, Enza. Great insight. If we're talking about the trust, I wouldn't expect, honestly, I don't think any of us would expect trust to be there from first day. It's impossible. Even when you start a new job, you have to really prove yourself either as an employer or as an employee. As two partners in a business, you need to walk the talk before trust is extended to you. So just because trust is not there from the beginning, it shouldn't stop us. As Enza was saying, let's be strategic about it and let's see, okay, how do we go about it? How do we establish communication? If there's something that us in coaching, we know is that communication is the key to pretty much everything, if not everything. And just be open. Just don't be shy to ask, what do you need? We were talking before, Enza and I, about coaching starting to be more and more an integral part of any corporation or any business for that matter. And if we think about coaching, when you coach your employees, what you're telling them, what the message to them is, I trust you to do what you need. So maybe before trust is established at 100%, step back and ask, what do you need in order to do your job? How can I help you to do your job? So that would be just the start. As we were saying, Enza and I, we do not have the answers. We have lots of questions, though.
There is this formula on trust that I came across, and I will get the reference and cite it later. So basically, there was this mathematical formula that said trust is equal to. So if you think of the top part, the numerator, it's equal to how reliable you are, plus how credible you are based on your experience and so on, plus how safe of an environment you create. So that's the top part. And that is divided by how self-centered and personally driven and acting towards yourself you are. So obviously, if the denominator is a lot bigger than the numerator, that's going to dilute the trust. So why do I bring that up? Okay, not because I love mathematics, but I bring that up because trust is obviously a composite of a lot of different variables. And yes, we're asking employers to trust their employees, but at the same time, it's a two-way street, right? So absolutely. I think that the more we establish credibility as employees, so the more I prove that I'm reliable and I'm credible and I can get stuff done, then of course my manager is going to trust me. On the other end of this that equation, the manager has to extend that same belief that they can trust their employees and let them do what needs to be done. So it is a two-way street. If we don't invest in both of the dynamics, then of course we're going to have a problem with trust, which comes back to, I think, my initial point, which is this is asking us to evolve the management skills that we may have been taught, right? So there was management, you know, I talked about the agrarian society and the industrialists were managing by authority. And then in my day, it was managing by objectives. So this is, we're at an inflection point about how do we manage. What is the next way of managing? And this is why coaching, I think, is surfacing as, oh, this could be the next way. And in fact, it probably is.
it is, for sure it is. It started, we see it, I think, as every day in our interactions. And actually, talking about interactions, it's bringing me to a point. I was actually looking for the book. I think it's called Work From Anywhere. For sure, I will put it for everybody in the comments after that. They were talking about how companies were offering different perks, okay? We've heard so many times, ping pong table, all kinds of perks. I honestly found it very interesting that they say that now the main perk is meaningful contact with other people. And I think that is really, really something that we have to watch in the future. If we think, and I was talking again about trust, that it's a two-way street, it's really bringing me to a point that I was going to make before the last question we had about the recruiting. How do we recruit? The way I see it, it's probably as me, Inc. It's me, Gabriella, that as an employee, I have to be autonomous, I have to be trusted, I have to be independent. Of course, I have to be very knowledgeable. So it's really a circle. It goes back to what Enzo was saying. We're having a few more minutes. I just wanted to see if we have more questions before we advance. Until we see if we have more questions, Enzo, if you want.
Yeah. You know, you were mentioning, yes, I absolutely like, we are social beings, right? So I think it would be slightly unrealistic, perhaps a lot more unrealistic, if we were to say, oh, we're never going to have human contact again in the workplace. Maybe that could happen, but we are social beings. And of course, there's an expectation that at some point we could, the future of work, we obviously might have to go, we'd be in a place together because there's a purpose. But I wanted to share an anecdote. So this is what I was trying to get to, is that in some of my coaching calls, so sometimes people have expressed frustration. So they've gone to the office, but because it's hybrid and because not everybody is there, they end up spending the day at the office, but on webinars, but at the office. And so that obviously created a lot of frustration for some people, because they were like, why did I have to drive all the way to the office to be on a webinar when I could have done it at home? So this just simply underlines that it would be really important to figure out the true reason if we're, and I'm circling back again on working remotely or not working remotely, but figuring out, you know, does this make sense? Like, why am I asking my staff to do this? Is it because I am not agile and I'm not willing to try something different? I miss socialization and I want that, but then asking ourselves, but how else could I socialize with my colleagues at work? So that's the beauty of coaching, is we're really good at helping our clients envision future states that don't exist. And that's why we find it so difficult, because they don't exist. So that's why obviously the future of work is so fascinating, because we're only going to know it as we go on and live it. So maybe it would help. I would just go through. I have some future of work trends that I think would be worth at least surfacing, and then we can all go away and think about them a little bit more. So I'm going to go with the Gartner ones, because I also have the World Economic Forum ones, but I like these ones. So here are the 9 trends according to Gartner in a report that was published earlier at the beginning of 2022. So the first one is hybrid work becomes mainstream. The second one is there's going to be a shortage of critical talent. So as I go through this list, maybe think about, yes, I'm seeing it. Yes, it's happening. The third one, well-being, is going to be a key metric. The fourth one, diversity and inclusion outcomes could worsen just as a result of dynamics and remote work. Turnover will increase. So they actually had a statistic that in a survey, 52% of people said they would leave if they didn't have a hybrid option. Managers' roles are changing, and we spent a little bit of time talking about that. And Generation Z wants an in-person experience. So as you were mentioning, you know, the socialization aspect. Shorter work weeks are a new employee value proposition. I was just reading this morning that they're concluding a study on the 4-day week out in the UK. And then the 9th one is that data collection is expanding. So we may not know the future, but the good news is that we'll have a lot of data that will help us to shape it.
That is great, Enza. And trying to wrap it up before we see if there's any more questions. I was just really thinking, if there is one thing we're going to leave you with today from our rambling about future of work, is ask yourself questions. Just don't, what we're trying to say is, it's a new way of working. It's going to be a new way of working. It will require adaptation and new ideas and innovation. Before you take any decision, communication is important, and really asking the questions for everybody around the table.
Yeah, so before we close, I'll add some more questions for reflection. So think about how willing am I, or are you, how willing are you to evolve your management style, because an evolution will be needed. What's the extent of our corporate empathy? So by that, are we really listening? Are we really listening to what is needed? So both from the employees, but also from the market. What is our reskilling strategy? So we will have to reskill. So what is it? And then last, but definitely not least, is what am I curious about? What am I willing to connect to others to learn more about? And that's kind of accepting that there's vulnerability in this whole process, because we don't know, right? Because we're no longer the experts that we thought we were before we were all shaken by what has happened. So, so those are some of the questions that we would leave you with. I am going to do a bit of a shameless plug for coaches, just because it's appropriate. I do believe firmly that there is an opportunity to either learn coaching capabilities for yourself. Secondly, is to build coaching capabilities within a company. It is time and money well spent. There's data on that. You can explore that. And the third is obviously to work with external coaches to optimize the working environment. So, Gabby, I've so much enjoyed going on this ramble and walk with you today. I don't know if you want anything else to add anything. Otherwise, I will close the.
I think we're at time. As we said, we can ramble forever. But I think we're at time. I don't think there are any other questions, because I think we would have seen them on our screen.
Yes.
So I think you can take us out.
Perfect. So I'm gonna take us to the end of the ramble, the end of the road for today. So thank you so much. It's been so much fun, Gabby. Thank you for taking me out of my comfort zone. Please visit us at grandheroninternational.com, where you can find this episode as well as all the previous ones for download, and that's at no cost to you. I want to thank our GHI colleagues who are working tirelessly to make this possible. And this is Enza Signorella, and you have been listening to Let's Ramble, brought to you by Grand Heron International.
Thank you.
Thank you.